Welcome, everybody. Welcome, allowing folks to just settle. I'm Patrick Brown. I use he and they pronouns. I'm super excited to be in connection with everyone tonight and just aware of the dukkha provided by Zoom today. Emiko was not joking. So you'll see this backup computer. At any time this goes wrong, I might have to transfer to that one. But yeah, I'm coming to you from the unceded land of the Ohlone, also known as Oakland, California. If there's anything that we can do in order to help people show up more fully tonight, if there's access needs, please don't hesitate to drop them in the chat or to let Emiko know. I have a microphone which should be helpful, but if I'm speaking too loudly, softly, or quickly, please don't hesitate to drop that in the chat. Our agenda for tonight is going to be to practice for about 25 to 30 minutes. I am going to offer some light instruction. I wanted to orient us with the practice of the Vedanas tonight. And so this is a practice of noticing the feeling tones of our emotions. And so I will offer some light instruction at the beginning, and then it'll be mostly silent for the rest. After that, we'll move into Dharma talk. I'm very excited to teach for during the month of Pride, and I've been really reflecting on how my practice has had a very integral role in how I have identified myself and my queer identity. So, super excited to talk more about the deep practices of the Dharma and how they support our autonomy and our expression. I also want to tell a few stories about queerness that I've seen in the Dharma. And I've got a host of characters with me tonight to share. And so after that, we'll likely have some time either for small groups or large group conversation. It will kind of be a choose your own adventure. It will be up to the room. And then we'll close with some appreciations and dedication of merit. Emiko, did I forget anything? Are there any other needs people have for our practice period tonight? All right, wonderful. Well, I'm going to invite people to find a posture that feels both comfortable but also alert. A place that you can kind of sustain yourself without having to move too much for a while. Like to think nice long spine. Also to feel your feet on the floor and feel the weight of yourself in the chair. If it feels good to you, I'll invite us to have a few breaths together. So we'll take a deep breath in through the nose and then out through the mouth. Allow ourselves to arrive. Turn our attention inward. Just feeling the gratitude of being present with each other tonight. Sometimes the most difficult part is just making it to the cushion, even on Zoom. So I invite us to have another deep breath in through the nose and out through the mouth. Invite you just to lightly scan through the body, and you might notice where there are places where you can invite more relaxation or if there's a place of tension or discomfort, feel free to adjust. But as we scan through, just noticing if there's capacity to relax the muscles in our temple, scanning down through our face into the jaw, down the jaw into the neck, and if it feels good to just roll the neck or hunch up the shoulders and then let them fall. Just noticing what information's available in our body, scanning through the chest and the belly, noticing any tightness in our forearms or our hands and fingers. If it feels good, just to wiggle your fingers or scrunch your hands. And then noticing the large muscle groups in the quads and the glutes. Notice your calves, and if it feels good to squish your toes or just put a little bit of pressure on the bottoms of your feet, just allow our awareness to be settled in our body and notice what it feels like to be in a posture we can maintain for a while. One last breath in through the nose And out through the mouth. And as you let your gaze fall low or your eyes close, you can invite us into a practice of Vedana feeling tones. And then into a silent practice. I'll invite the bell one time to begin and three times to end. So the invitation is to, with our full-bodied awareness, practice noticing the feeling tones of our thoughts. So as you let your mind settle, you might notice that thoughts arise. And for this next little period, I'm going to invite you just to notice as those thoughts arise, you can identify if that thought is positive, it feels like a negative, or even just a neutral tone to the thought. So we'll practice with just noticing the thoughts and labeling them as positive or pleasant, negative or unpleasant, or they might be neutral. So for the next minute or so, just see if you can allow the thoughts to arise, identify the feeling tone, and then let them pass. And we'll do this just for about 1 minute. And now expanding our awareness, we'll use the same Vedana feeling tone practice for a little more guidance. Invite you to remember back to this morning, just as you first opened your eyes, as you became aware of being awake in the world. Invite you to comb through one of your activities at the beginning of your day. So you may have been some hygiene involved, brushing your teeth or the shower. May have spoken to somebody on the phone or in person. You may have prepared yourself something to eat. But I invite you to comb through the memories of this morning and see if you can continue this Vedana practice of noticing, oh, that was pleasant. Oh, that part of my morning was unpleasant. Or that activity in this morning was neutral. So we'll do this again for another minute. Just labeling, identifying the feeling tone of some of your experiences this morning. And as we continue this practice, going to invite you to find an aspect of your life where there's some challenge. You don't want to work with the most challenging thing that you have had happen, but maybe just a slight annoyance or a discomfort or a frustration. See if you can remember a difficulty that you've had recently and pull that into the center of your mind's eye and your attention. And then again, for the next minute, we'll just sit with that. Explore the origin of it, know what it's like to meet that moment and consider the causes and conditions. And as you're noticing, again, continue to label your thoughts as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We'll do this for 1 minute. And we'll practice just one more moment. I'm asking you to call to your mind's eye a time recently that you felt really healthy, very centered, appreciated. You might think of a time when you were laughing out loud or had a full smile on your face. But think about the conditions and causes that created them, that situation. If you hold that memory in your mind, I invite you again to notice the nature of the thoughts that arise while you're thinking of this. Label them both as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. We'll do this for 1 more minute. And as we bring this practice to a close, we move directly into our silent mindfulness and meditation. It's helpful. I invite you to find an anchor for your practice right now, and you may choose to use your breath, anchoring in the sensations of the expansion of your chest or your belly, or you may anchor in the breath and notice the sensations at the nostrils as you inhale and exhale. If it's useful, just to be with that anchor. We now begin our silent practice period. Taking a moment to notice if your attention has wandered. Gently and kindly invite our focused attention back to the breath or another anchor to keep a single point of attention for just the next few minutes. Taking a moment again to notice if your attention has wandered, inviting it back to a focused single point of attention, to anchor your attention in the breath for just the last few minutes. Thank you so much for your practice. So how was that? How was your practice? Sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant, sometimes neutral. Yeah, I'm so excited to be with this group. Spirit Rock is one of my spiritual homes, and I've had so much growth in my practice. I want to introduce myself by means of a story, how I came to this journey to teach. And it's, oh, thank you, Gabriel. I'll speak louder. So I am from the south side of Chicago. I grew up to some working class parents that were very union-y, union based. And my mother was Irish Catholic. My father was a Baptist preacher. And somewhere along the way, I found Buddhism. So I was working in a nonprofit job in Chicago. It was very successful. Very successful. Like, it was making impact. It was called Green Course Chicago. It was a urban green jobs training program. Folks from who were formerly incarcerated were learning new skills and getting back in the workforce. It was really powerful. And if any of you have known this kind of story, the nonprofit industrial complex is one of built on extraction. Oh, people are nodding. Okay, great. This isn't a new group. So I found myself in this condition. I was the counselor, I was the trainer, I was the fundraiser, I did all these things and I was very successful. Yes, thank you, Eileen. So prevalent. And what I didn't realize, because all so many of my cues were external, right? And so when I started to gauge myself in my success, I wasn't tracking the inside. I was really struggling. And it got very dark and very dangerous for me. I was having this wonderful professional success. And at the same time, I was just burning all the way through anything internally I had to sustain myself. So, out of sheer desperation, I moved to California. I was in a fellowship and I loved Oakland. There were so many powerful Black people. It was so queer. I was like, yes. And so I moved and I did what people do in California. I went to a silent retreat. That's what. It's like, I don't know. So I went to Spirit Rock, this person of color silent retreat for 9 days. And if many of you have been on retreat, the first couple of days, you're kind of like, oh, I'm with my thoughts. And oh, there's this and that. And the longer you go, you tend to get into things that maybe you've suppressed more. And so I started to tapping into memories and sensations that were very, very old from my childhood. Stories of abuse, stories of neglect, stories that were really quite painful. I didn't know how to approach them. And as my attention turned towards them, I was terrified. So I broke my silence. I went to the retreat managers and I was like, you have to help me because I can't touch into this suffering. It's so deep that I'm very scared. I don't think I'll be able to stop once I start crying and touching it. And these two wonderful teachers, one teacher came to support me. Her name is Gina Sharp, and she's phenomenal. She's a very slight woman, and I'm a large guy, but she came and she sat with me, and I just broke all the way open. And my suffering really poured out. And during the next week, Larry Yang and Gina Sharp really gave me some amazing tools in the Dharma that helped me to navigate that overwhelm, that dukkha, that suffering. And I just thought, oh, why doesn't everybody have these tools? There's so much in the world that is difficult to manage. Why aren't people doing more of this? And I wasn't new to meditation. My mother had been meditating for a very long time. I remember being 5 and 6 years old and sitting in the park with her on a picnic blanket and her telling me to close my eyes and try to meditate. And so I wasn't new to it, but I devoted myself in that moment to trying to increase accessibility to these teachings and the cessation of suffering that's available. I tell this story both as a means of like introducing myself, but also because I think it resonates that a lot of us enter through the doorway of suffering. And what I want to talk about tonight is, the relationship between our mindfulness practices, what's available to us in the Dharma, and our liberation, our freedom. And so, I think the suffering can look very different for all of us, but in practice, a lot of us are trying to reduce the amount of suffering we're feeling. And there's so many origins of the suffering, but I want to name a few. One of them is that I was very closeted and didn't feel safe to have a queer identity. while I was living in Chicago and working that job. And so it was exhausting to navigate, switching pronouns in my stories and, talking about different parts of town and any manufacturing an identity, a projection for people to see me so that I can, do what I was doing behind closed doors. And I think that that was part of my suffering. I think there's a way in which we all move through the world with this heteronormativity that is, the culture of it is very ubiquitous. If I ask you to think about the ways in which you learn to, the way in which you learn to dress professionally, how did you learn what was professional dress, or how did you learn what was appropriate behavior at a birthday party? Right? Some of our cues are explicit. Someone might tell you, this is how you go to eat lunch. There's the cafeteria. Follow the line, go eat lunch. But some of them are more instinctual. Some of them we just follow along. So I'm just pointing to the ways in which culture can be transmitted unconsciously. And the way that the culture of heteronormativity was transmitted to me, right? Happy images on television and in the media, the ways in which the queer people I did know about were vilified, searching for representation, often met with like lack of identity, lack of that. I couldn't find people to look up to, certainly not men who loved other men. And so I just am pointing to the ways that we are socialized into this identity of, for my safety, for my access, I assimilate. What are the ways that I eventually came to be truer to my own self and my identity was through my practice of authenticity. Right? I think in order to build a practice to be more affirming of our identities, we need to be aware. We need to have that lens that can turn inward. Right? If we're constantly looking outward, there's a way in which we are very much along with the status quo. But one of the things that Gina and Larry taught me to do was to, move my attention from external factors to the internal. What was I aware of in my body? What was I noticing around grief? What was I noticing around joy? And so intentionally turn my attention from the external to the internal was a very significant practice for me. There was a lot of freedom in this. It was difficult for sure. The notion of, oh, can I sit in this posture and close my eyes and notice my breath? And can I be with the awareness of myself? It was very difficult. There were things that were uncomfortable that would arise. As we did the Vedana practice, you might have noticed that, there's a lot of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, and going through those practices was painful. And what I noticed was the deeper into my practice I got, the more there was spaciousness. I'm going to plant a question here for you to consider around, what impact has your practice had in your ability to be authentic? It might be more about your awareness, or it might be the ways in which you're able to identify, but just I'm planting the question you might answer later or to yourself, like, how has the practice really created space for you to be more of yourself? Okay, so back to this idea of mindfulness as a tool for liberation. Accessing our minds and our attention is such a gift. Becoming aware of our mental states, allows us to find separation from maybe more pre-programmed thoughts in spaces where I have been encouraged to think or behave in a particular way, particularly straight. It took me being able to reflect on my own postures. It took to not be pre-programmed in these thoughts, and I knew how people wanted me to perform, but to be authentic really required a level of authenticity that wasn't possible unless I could be mindful. I had to turn my attention inward and start beginning to know myself, you know, I could tell you what my, how my mother wanted me to behave. I could tell you how my school wanted me to behave. But could I tell you how I wanted to behave? Not so much. And so this practice of noticing your awareness of your intention and your own needs, or even what you find pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that practice actually provides a lot of freedom. I started to begin to notice that, oh, I'm much happier when I'm not hiding myself. I have less stress with the people that I can connect with and be more authentic. I probably need more of that in my life. Or to this nonprofit job that I was performing, it was a savior mentality, I'm gonna name it. Thought I was saving the world, and I was very identified with this, like, I'm helping these people. It wasn't until I was really able to turn my attention inward that I was starting to identify, you know, that's not really what's happening here. You're projecting a lot. You are like attaching to an identity that's isn't all the way healthy. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, I think about the ways in which disconnecting from the status quo can be very painful and difficult. As a person, you know, who everybody wants to seek belonging, everybody wants a community. And if the community that's all around you is different than, you know, is performing in a way that is unhealthy for you. Sometimes I was okay with that. Sometimes I was trying to perform, I was trying to fit in. And if that meant dating a woman, although I wasn't particularly, didn't feel that was who I really wanted to be, I did it for a sense of belonging. And as I became more and more aware of my needs, I was much more likely to accept them. When I was 30 years old, I finally came out to my mom. And I remember the conversation because it started as, you know, I was going to visit her for the weekend and I was going to tell her right when I got off the train. And then, of course, I got off the train and I froze. We went out to dinner and I'm going to tell her at dessert. When she comes back from the bathroom, I'm going to tell her. I'm just going to get it out there so we can talk about it all weekend. Yeah, didn't happen. Next morning, we're going to go to the theater. You know, we did a bunch of activities. Every moment I wanted to tell her, and I couldn't articulate. I couldn't find the words. It always seemed like it wasn't the right moment. And then I tell you, we were driving back to the train station, was headed back home, and I'm sitting in the car, toot toot, here comes the train. And I'm like, it's now or never. And I took the posture of the lotus position. You know, I sat and I was like, okay. And I tapped into this feeling that I had had around to be my authentic self, this practice of like noticing what I need and what pleases me. And I found this little kernel that allowed me to say, Mom, I want to tell you something. You know, I'm dating somebody and it's a man and he's making me very happy and we're dating and I know that's new for you. And then I said, you know, here's my train. So you think about it. I'll talk to you later. Okay, bye. I got on the train and she called me. It was new to have cell phones back then, but she called me on my cell phone. And she said, what are you doing? She's like, you know, I love you. I'll always love you. We have a lot to talk about. But it was literally the Dharma practice that allowed me to like tap into something that made me feel like it was okay to go against the grain, right? That I was able to be authentic and able to take, in some ways, control of my life to be who I wanted to be. I didn't have the strength before I was aware of this Dharma practice. Practicing mindfulness, mindful awareness, really allowed me to be much more attuned with myself and then show up more fully. And so, yeah, disconnecting from the status quo really requires a bravery of heart and a clarity of mind that I think is supported by the Dharma practice. We've got to be aware of our true selves. And then on top of that, it's incumbent upon us to figure out how to express ourselves. Once we know ourselves, we can be more fabulous. once we know ourselves, we can also be, reduce the amount of suffering that we're experiencing. Our inner work is deeply related to our attached to our joy and our mudita. So this is where I'd love to pause and just, name a couple of concepts and then read a couple of thoughts and then open it up for a little bit of conversation. So without the ability to be aware of our internal processes in a way that mindfulness allows us to, it's very complicated and difficult to actually engage externally. In my story, if I wasn't able to be my true authentic self, there was no way that I was going to be able to have a sustainable external expression of my life. I was running myself ragged, and part of my burnout was from hiding. And so I think that there's a relationship between our individual awareness of self and the ways that we show up in the world. And that's what I want to point to with just a couple of readings. Okay, so this is a book of Bishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama called The Book of Joy. And Archbishop Desmond Tutu starts, "We are meant to live in joy. This does not mean that life will be easy or painless. It means that we can turn our faces to the wind and accept that this is the storm we must pass through. We cannot succeed by denying what exists. The acceptance of reality is the only place from which we can change, excuse me, which change can begin." Just pointing towards like the ability to really turn and face towards the storm or towards my suffering was really the place where I had the first experience of being free. This is a reading from The Heart of the Buddha's Teachings by Thich Nhat Hanh. We practice by seeking meaning of our life. We know that we don't want to run after fame, money, or sensual pleasure, and we learn the art of meaningful living. In time, we develop some understanding and compassion. We find that these are the energies that we can use to alleviate our suffering and the suffering of others. It already gives some meaning to our life. We need places where we can go to sit, breathe quietly, and look and listen deeply. When we have difficulties at home, we need a room like that where we can take refuge. Just pointing to some of the foundations of what we need in our practice to really get free. I have a few more. Emiko, do I have time to read another one? This is from a wonderful book called Dharma, Color, and Culture. It's a New Voices in Western Buddhism. It's a compilation book. And this piece is from Marlene Jones, who is a spirit rock of identity for people who feel familiar with. She writes, "One imperfect way to cultivate movements of knowledge during our daily lives is by knowing our true nature. Seeking our authentic self is one of the first important steps that we can take on the daily basis. This is known as taking refuge in the Buddha. The second step is taking refuge in the Dharma, the 25-year-old, 100-year-old teachings of the Buddha that direct our living. And finally, we take refuge in the Sangha, our spiritual communities. These communities might be large centers, small sitting groups, or our family practice. For many years, I thought therapy to sustain myself while coping through the racism that I felt all around me. Although therapy helped to some degree, it was my practice that has made the greatest difference in my life and my work as a Dharma teacher." Just pointing towards like the deep ways in which our self-identification and learning about our practice internally supports not just ourselves, but externally supports so many others. Okay, one of my last readings here is from Larry Yang, Awakening Together. In this section, Larry's talking about awareness within and awareness without. The first part of our mindfulness is to attend to one's inner experience as impacted by the external world. But there is some more to the Satipatthana Sutta than that. The Buddha teaches the second part of mindfulness is where we direct our mindfulness externally. Thus, mindfulness moves in the direction of external input and takes external events or people as objects of attention. This would include becoming aware of our impact on other individuals, groups, and communities. The third part of the practice is we turn our mindfulness practice from moment to moment towards both internal and external practices. So he's pointing towards, there's a couple of diagrams in here. It's a wonderful read if you haven't picked it up, but Larry's pointing to the relationship between the internal and external. And in order to show up fully for that conversation and to engage in that practice, we have to have a baseline awareness of self that really is supported, let's say created, through practices of concentration, mindfulness, focus, and even in practices like the Vedanas. The Vedanas was a practice that allows one to notice not just attachment to a feeling or a thought, but to, by labeling it, create a little distance between ourselves and that thought. You might have noticed as you were, say, asked you to think about a challenging situation, there may have been pleasant tones of the thoughts that were arising in the midst of the unpleasant ones. Or as I asked you to think about a place where you felt seen, heard, and appreciated, you may have noticed that the tones weren't all pleasant. And that spaciousness between kind of the status quo, oh, everything about this is terrible, or everything about this is wonderful, in that moment you can really have impact. So, you might have a few deep breaths together, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Again, breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth. Just acknowledging what it feels like to be in community together tonight. Take one last breath in together and out. Aware of the causes and the conditions that create suffering in so many places in the world. Aware of the injustices and the dukkha experienced by so many of our queer siblings. Take a moment to dedicate the merit of our practice together tonight to move throughout the world, touching all beings in every direction and offering ease, offering well-being. As a salve to the suffering, may our practice create liberation and freedom for all.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.